Well, good morning, and thanks for tuning in to the morning show here at 88.5 KRFY. And it is Wednesday, February 28th, the last day of February. And I'm Susie Prez, one of your co-hosts this morning. Hi, Chris.
I'm Chris Bessler. I'm over here in the co-host chair. How are you doing, Susie?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, it's a kind of a beautiful little late winter morning out there.
Do you think we'll get sun?
Oh, we might get... Actually, I did see a little kind of sunbreak happening to the west. We might have that roll through, but that's not exactly what's on the near-term weather. But we have a great show today. We are going to be talking with folks from the Food for Our Children. We have Michelle Murphy and Jennifer McDonald with us. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be back at KRFY.
Yeah, and you have you're going to tell us a little bit about your group, but you have a big event coming up that's important for Food for Our Children. And then we're going to have a second part of this show, Susie.
And that is a pre-recorded interview. I had the opportunity to sit down with Luke Mayville on Monday because he was in town right before he flew away to New York, talking about Reclaim Idaho and the initiative that is now a campaign to put Medicaid expansion on the November ballot. And that is a statewide initiative. And so around 8:30, 8:35, we'll be playing that interview also this morning.
Yeah, so two big topics today. But first, the big topic that everybody always has on their mind, the weather.
The weather. From the National Weather Service, currently it's 30 degrees outside. And we can expect a 30% chance of snow. High today of 37, so that would mean probably rain. But there's a winter weather advisory for tonight and into Thursday. 70% chance of snow. Low tonight, 30. High tomorrow, 38. And doesn't look like much snow will come down. Half inch on today. Tomorrow up 1 to 2 inches. And on Thursday, it's a little bit, maybe an inch. But maybe up in the mountains, there'll be more snow.
There'll be more. There generally is.
All right.
Other things going on outside. Sunrise this morning was at 6:29 a.m. It'll set at 5:28 p.m. We're gaining daylight every day because we're getting closer to the spring solstice now. And so in the past week, our days have gotten 27 minutes longer. So,
and I can actually feel it. You wake up at 6 or even 5:45 in the morning, and there's light.
Yeah, there's light.
It's so different.
It sure helps you get out of bed.
Every year, I love this time of year.
A couple other things outside. The first quarter moon is going to be Friday, so if we get those kind of clearer skies for the weekend, maybe you can look up at night and see the moon up there. An interesting thing about February, today's last day, but there was not a full moon phase in February, strangely enough. So,
January, there were two full moons.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so they kind of got crowded in there, and then February slid through without a full moon. The forecast, up at Schweitzer, there had 2 inches overnight. They've had 6 inches in the last 24 hours. They've had just fantastic skiing, as I understand, and they're expecting more snow, as you mentioned. I want to mention something else happening at Schweitzer, and that's this Saturday, they're having the Mega Day for skiers and boarders. And that is it's a demo day, and they're going to have about 14 different companies there with like 400 brand new state-of-the-art boards and skis that are going to be up for trying out. So people that are skiers, it's a heck of a deal. And you pay a fee, but all the money goes to the Panhandle Alliance for Education. So it's actually a fundraiser for our kids in our schools.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
Love that.
And what else is going on around town, Susie?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, and I'd like to just mention one. Tonight at the Panada, there is a Newport Smelter panel discussion. It's being put on by the City of Sandpoint. It starts at 5:30 to 7:30 this evening. And the public is welcome to come and listen to representatives discuss potential impact of the Newport, Washington Smelter project and how to address it.
Yes.
I think that's important.
Yeah, they have panelists from the Pondere County Community Development Director is going to be there. And, of course, this is an economic boost to the town of Newport if the smelter comes in. But, of course, there are, on the other side, a lot of environmental concerns. So there's going to be the regional director from the Idaho Department of Environment Quality, as well as the Department of Ecology in Washington. And there will be folks from the Idaho Conservation League, the Kalispell Tribe, which has its reservation near Newport. They're concerned about it. And the group called Citizens Against the Newport Smelter, as well as the city of Sandpoint. So it's going to be a wide-ranging discussion of things. Again, that's 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. tonight at the Panada.
It's a great opportunity to find out the facts, because that's what will be presented, especially from the scientists.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are upset, but a lot of people don't know the facts yet. So yeah, it's a good chance to find out.
It is. And I want to mention something else that's a public interest here, that the public comment period for Burlington Northern Santa Fe's second railroad bridge across Lake Ponderay opened just this week on Monday. It's right now, it's currently just a 30-day comment window. I know that some folks are moving to extend the comment period because it is a pretty big topic for us to build a second railroad bridge across the lake and the ramifications of that. There's actually two places to put in comment. One is the Army Corps of Engineers, and the other one is the Idaho Department of Lands. And there will be more information in the newspapers, I'm sure, about how to get to those places and put in public comment. The Sandpoint Online Facebook page does have a post up right now with links to those comment places, so you could go there to find where you can see more about the application and put in a comment on it.
Right. I think the mood right now is getting involved and finding out information and people just joining in. And, you know, if you have a problem with something, get involved.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we're coming up on the election. May 15th, primary election, big one with a lot of local races that are important. And one date that's coming up is March 9th. In the primary, you have to, if you want to vote Republican, you have to declare as a Republican. You don't have to do that if you're a Democrat. You don't have to have a party affiliation declared to vote in the Democratic ballot. But there is a decision point there for folks to make. How do they want to vote in this election? So keep your eye on that. And if you're a voter, you're thinking about how you want to vote. It is one date, March 9th. That's also the last day for candidates to file for election and be on the ballot. So if you're somebody out there thinking about running for office, March 9th is your last chance to get on the ballot. So one of the important dates. And of course, we're going to be doing a lot of candidate interviews after the ballot gets firmed up on March 9th.
We'll have local decision primary 2018.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to be talking about a lot of politics around here on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays, the political day. Also, just so you know, if you are not affiliated with a party, you can actually affiliate the day of election to be a Republican on the day. But if you're already affiliated now, you have to change by March 9th.
Yeah, you have to unaffiliate by March 9th. And that's a big decision for a lot of folks. Yeah. A lot of different opinions on how you should approach the election and what party you should be in. And
how can you make your vote count?
Yeah.
That's the question sometimes. Okay. Well, let's get to our interview. What do you think, Chris?
Yes.
Okay. We have Michelle Murphy and Jennifer McDonald from Food for Our Children. And as I said before, later in the show, we'll have an interview with Luke Mayville. But for right now, Michelle, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me back again. It's great to be here.
And Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us, what is Food for Our Children and why is it important for us to know about the information you have?
Right. Food for Our Children was started 3 years ago when we started learning that kids were returning to school on Monday mornings and just literally starving because they weren't having sufficient access to food over the weekends. There was one story in particular at Head Start, and we're talking about 3 to 5 year olds at Head Start, where they were making breakfast burritos on Monday morning and the teachers, the adults, could barely get through half of them. And one little guy went through 3 of them. So we're like, the more we looked into it, the more we started talking with educators, the more problematic the situation seemed to be. Like, I knew that there was some childhood hunger, but not as extensive as we're learning it is. It's probably 1 in 5, we estimate, are food insecure. that results in about 1,600 to 2,000 children in our county that are not getting adequate food. And it's really important. The key thing for me is that if kids are not having sufficient food, they're not getting an education. And that's the most important thing in my mind into breaking generational poverty. So it's really, really, really important that we, you know, feed our kids. I mean, it's just basic. So we started raising money to buy weekend food for the kids. And we partner with the food bank. And at first I thought, well, people are just going to be really just jumping on board with us. And when I first started giving presentations, I don't think that people really knew about the problem. And people would say, well, there's food stamps, there's the food bank, what's the problem? But that's just not enough. So last year, we were fortunate enough to give a presentation to 101 Women, which is a fabulous organization that Jennifer is part of. And that's how we hooked up again, because we had been working on gardens earlier, school gardens. So we were able to give a presentation, and Jennifer has just jumped on board with so much passion and energy for this cause. And so she's taken it upon herself to put on a fundraiser for Food for Our Children, which is going to, I'll let Jennifer talk about it. It's going to be next week, but we really appreciate 101 Women. And they were generous enough to give us $10,000 for the weekend food program last fall. And, you know, just the connections that we've made through that organization is just fantastic. And if people don't know about 101 Women, maybe you can tell what you guys did and what the upcoming fundraiser is.
Before we get to that, because I do want to hear about 101 Women, that's new to me, but you mentioned the $10,000 that you received, but that probably doesn't cover your weekend campaign to feed children. Does it really take, and what's missing? What do we need to know as a community?
When we first started, the food bank had the financial capacity to provide weekend food for three of our elementary schools. We've taken over the financial responsibility for two of those schools. We've added the remaining elementary schools except for Washington, which I think that we'll probably be able to do in the fall. And so we've also added Head Start. The hospital was one of our first really major funders. They gave us $25,000, and they've adopted the middle school and the Lake Pendere High School. Because of stigma, the high school has decided not to participate at this time, but we've got a pilot program at the middle school to see if, you know, we can start doing some things to overcome the stigma. Because at the elementary schools, generally over 50% of the elementary kids qualify for the free and reduced lunch and breakfast program. So they don't go from elementary school to the middle school and automatically have new access to food. So that's sadly a really, really sad situation that, you know, the bullying aspect outweighs the increased access to food. So I met with the charter school yesterday, too, and they don't even qualify. They don't have the federal funding for the free and reduced breakfast and lunch. So the teachers there are using their own money to feed our kids. And that's what was happening at the elementary schools too, where I'm kind of going off on a tangent now, but we thought, okay, we've got weekend food just about figured out. And the cost of weekend food for just the schools that we're doing now is about $70,000 for the school year. And that doesn't include the spring breaks and the Christmas breaks. And then, you know, we've got to talk about summer as well. But we thought, okay, we kind of have a handle on the weekend food now, including most of the schools. And then I got an email from one of the principals saying, you know, all of our teachers and I and the principal, and we're spending our own money because a lot of our kids are having meltdowns, you know, mid-morning where the breakfast has worn off. And so they are just having, I mean, talk about meltdowns, just really sad. And so we need money for snacks. So then we started, okay, we've got to address this mid-morning snack program too. She said, and then when we met with this principal after we got the email, Cedar Hills Church actually has picked up the funding for Kootenai. We've adopted Kootenai. She told a story about the day before our meeting that a little girl in kindergarten was in the cafeteria picking crumbs off the ground to try and feed herself. So it's like, you know, really, honestly, enough is enough. We've got to feed our kids. And if they're in this, you know, meltdown, they're obviously not going to be able to concentrate. So
Michelle, so what are the mechanics? So you mentioned food on the weekends, but what you actually do is prepare a bag of food that the children can take home.
Right. So the food bank purchases. So what we do is we'll raise money so that we'll compensate the food bank. The food bank purchases from Second Harvest in Spokane, which furnishes food for our food banks here. So the kids will go home with a bag of food that should last them for the weekend.
What kind of food is it?
Oh, there's, you know, it has to be, you know, shelf stable and require no preparation, because a lot of times these kids are at home with no adult supervision. So there's, you know, milk and cereal and a beef stick and like cans of like pasta and beans and things like that. So it's tough, you know, because we try to get it as nutrition, you know, as valuable as we can, but it's hard with, you know, it costs $4 for a bag of food. So with that, you know, budget restriction and what we can get. So mm-hmm.
Well, it's important that the kids be able to prepare the food themselves.
Yeah, so they can just open the can and it's good to go.
Yeah.
So you've partnered with many organizations in our community. The hospital started out, but now 101 Women.
Right.
So, Jennifer, you're part of that organization. Why don't you tell us what the response was of your group and maybe even a little bit about that group?
Well, 101... Excuse me. 101 Women started about 2 years ago. Michelle was a part of our third grant that we gave away for our spring 2017 grant. And it's exactly 101 women that have come together, and we've banded our resources. And so we give two grants a year, so a biannual grant. Each event, the women are responsible for $100. So we come together as 101 women, and each event we can give away $10,000, and it's a big number, you know, 2,000, 3,000, anything helps, but to help jumpstart a new nonprofit or help in a big way, these women have come together, taken responsibility, and say, we want to do something, and it's enough, you know, for... Our group is we have a very young base. Anyone who comes to our events, the presenters, are really surprised at the demographic. Our youngest member is 21, and the range goes all the way up. So it's a really great organization, and we wanted to just simply give and give simply. So it's all volunteer. It's super easy. And it's a two-hour commitment. So 4 hours for the whole year, and you're part of giving back $20,000 to the community. So it's really appealing to women who want to give back, who don't have the time and or the money, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll probably want to come back and learn a little bit more about 101 Women. But first, tell us about, you actually have an event coming up right now that's dedicated to this cause.
Yes. So, like Michelle said, we work together with 101 Women, and I am passionate about her cause. And so I thought, you know, I was trying to brainstorm on how to help a little bit more. And I am passionate about Sandpoint Strikers. I have three children in it, and we are having a fundraiser. It's a Kids Helping Kids is what it's called. And it's to bring social awareness to our club, families and the children, and try to raise money for our upcoming tournaments. So I've asked Sandpoint, the Ponderay Winery, and the Fat Pig, which is a new restaurant in town, to help us out. And they're giving 10% of all their proceeds back to Food for Our Children. And we're going to have a little silent auction for Strikers as well to help raise money for our upcoming tournaments. And we're going to give 10% of all our proceeds back to Food for Our Children as well.
I love the idea of kids helping kids. And it's hard to come up with a fundraiser because there's so many in our community.
So many.
This is a brainchild of Jennifer. So I love it, you know. And I think that opens it up with the stigma, too, where it's like, you know, the kids are like, you know, learning like compassion and, you know, maybe someone is not as fortunate of you. So I love the kids helping kids idea.
So you have this event, Kids Helping Kids. It's at the Ponderay Winery and the Fat Pig. So anything that is sold that day, which is March 6th from 4 to 8 p.m., plus your silent auction, will go towards Food for Our Children.
Absolutely.
And what are silent auction? You're just gathering things from around the community?
Yes, we have a, you know, there's many, many places in town that have donated. CrossFit Sandpoint. There are You know, the high school varsity soccer coaches have dedicated some of their time to provide private lessons. Glahey and Associates, MacDonald Law, CrossFit Sandpoint, many organizations in town, multiple restaurants have donated to, I guess, put together these baskets up for auction.
Contribute. Mm-hmm. And so that's 10%, but the silent auction is all 100%.
No, the silent auction is 10% goes to Food for Our Children, and then it's going to help Strikers raise money for their upcoming tournaments
as
well.
So it's really a partnered
event, yes.
Yeah? Okay. And if folks are listening and they say, hey, I want to donate something to the auction itself, or could you still take a donation?
Absolutely. We'll take whatever we can.
Okay.
And how do they get a hold of you?
They could give me a call at 208-255-6365. Or you can go to our Facebook events page. It's just the Kids Helping Kids fundraiser. And you can go on there as well to get information.
Mm-hmm.
Probably and there's also a website, sandpointsoccer.com.
Sandpointsoccer.com.
You can find more about Strikers there. I don't know if you linked up to the event from that page.
But yes.
You are. Okay.
That's linked up as well.
So back to Food for Our Children. 3 years in now, are you seeing a difference from the efforts, big efforts that you're putting forth?
I mean, at first, you know, I think I mentioned that people were thinking, well, there's the food bank and the food stamps, and that should be sufficient. So I think that now, I mean, I've been just going out there and talking to anybody that will listen to me. And I think that we really started, I was talking with Debbie Love at the food bank. It seems like people are really understanding, like, oh, maybe there is a problem, you know, and we can do something to help our kids. So, you know, beyond Jennifer and 101 Women, you know, we've created some great partnerships. I had just recently given a presentation to Rotary's Foundation Board, and Eric Paul with Washington Trust Bank thought, you know, came back and asked his staff, it's like, is there something we can do for Kootenai Elementary? I think that they are facing a lot of challenges. It cost us just for weekend food, and remember, these are just $4 bags. It's over $17,000 for the school year to do the weekend bags. We do about 115 bags, I think. So what they did is they picked up the remaining costs for Kootenai for this year. So that was $9,200, the check they wrote us. And then I went down to Coeur d'Alene and Coldwell Banker, Schneidmiller Realty, and Mountain West Bank, both in Coeur d'Alene and in Sandpoint. They've given us very large donations as well. So I really see the community coming together now and saying, you know, this is a problem that we can fix. I mean, the mission of Food for Our Children is to eliminate childhood hunger in Bonner County, and we take that very seriously. So, you know, it costs a lot of money. And, you know, we have to start looking at, like, you know, how do we sustain this? You know, how do we start breaking this problem, you know? And what I said, it's like getting these kids in education. My husband's a juvenile probation officer, and, you know, he's got kids on his caseload that are in elementary school. And so this is just something that's like, you know, we just have to start taking care of our kids and making a commitment to do that.
Yeah. Okay, so you are looking at how to break the cycle of poverty is really, that's the base problem here, right?
In my opinion, it is. So we met with the charter school yesterday, and we started talking about enhancing their culinary program. These kids are learning how to cook, you know, and like some creative ideas about, you know, maybe taking some ingredients home so that they can make a meal for their family. For their trimester fundraiser, they're going to have a soup kitchen. So Food for Our Children might underwrite the food costs for that. We have school gardens at each of the schools, at each of the elementary schools. I started that with Jennifer and I. That's when we met. What was that, 2010?
Well, let's talk about the school gardens.
Yeah.
You were telling me a story before we came into the studio today, because we have had you on in the past, and it's grown.
It has.
So what's going on, and what was that story?
You know, KRFY has been such a great sponsor of me from the beginning. Out of the blue, I wrote an email to Jim Healy saying, hey, you know, would you like to talk about school gardens? He's like, yes, 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 come on. So I've been bothering you guys ever since then. So, you know, we started out, we've got a garden at each of the elementary schools, and the Elks have been a huge supporter of this. They gave me $2,000 to, you know, finish up the gardens at the schools, and then one at the charter school. And I thought, okay, well, I've got this. I can check that off the list. I've got a garden at each of the schools. And so then I joined the Bonner County Health Coalition, which is a new organization. And we got a very large WIC grant, thanks to Nancy Jenkins at Panhandle Health. So we are starting to put in community gardens now. So last year we put one in at the food bank, and we're going to be expanding that in the in mid-April, April 14th, if anybody wants to come in and help us shovel dirt. And we put one in at Early Head Start, which Corey, was the executive director, was on KRFY, and it was a fantastic interview a couple of weeks ago. And so now this spring, we're going to put one in at the library, the East Bonner County Library, and one at Christ Our Redeemer, I hope. And so KRFY played a part in that. I was on the air and I said, I've got money to put in a garden, I think. That's not 100% yet, but we're getting there. And if anybody knows of someplace we can put a garden, please let me know. So one of your viewers, my friend Colleen Caldwell, called her pastor and said, hey, can we put in a community garden at Christ Our Redeemer, which is across from the athletic club, and they have all that land there. So they called me and said, we'd like to talk about putting in a garden. And I told them, let's go slow, you know, maybe 5 beds. And they decided, no, you know, we really want to put in 10 beds because we want to open it up to the low income rental that's in that area and open it up to our community and then support the food bank as well. So, yeah, thanks to KRFY, there's hopefully one going in at Christ Our Redeemer Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
And your efforts. It really brings about the thought of food justice. No one should go without food.
Right.
And that is a little key word that people are using all over the place. And this isn't just in Sandpoint. My son works at Second Harvest, and it's all over.
Great.
And he goes to the elementary schools and gives food samples and bags of food with recipes. But here in Sandpoint, we have the same situation, and it is a community issue. And what you're describing is how people are stepping up and solving the situation.
They really are. I mean, I haven't mentioned everybody that's coming in and helping us, but a lot of people are really stepping up and really trying to, you know, solve this problem. Lighthouse adopted Hope. The VFW, they adopted Southside because, you know, their people returning from their tours, or a lot of them are not asking for assistance. So they adopted Southside, so at least they know that their families will have food. So it's just on so many different levels, and, you know, just really coming together and having the conversation too, like, okay, what can we do and what's the next step?
Mm-hmm. We have just a few minutes left. I want to hear a little bit more about 101 Women. And do you have just 101 women?
Can you take
102?
You know, we actually have a wait list.
Oh.
Honestly, the first year we did this, we had about 37 on the wait list. And I wish we could take everything, but just all the administration. And like I said, it's all volunteer. People have full-time jobs that are on the board and really help out. I think we have to cap it at 101.
Okay.
Another organization could start up with the overflow.
Yes. And then, you know, the way we work is after a year, your membership's good for a year. And then we leave it open for 2 weeks for the current membership to reapply. And then we bring it to the wait list. And then if it doesn't fill, which it usually does, it goes to the public. And so it really keeps it interesting. Our group really learns about the community, kind of dives deeper. We have presentations. Each organization, there's three finalists that apply. Or actually, there's many apply. Three present at the event. And they get 10 minutes to kind of pitch their organization to the 101 women. And it's a vote. So each woman has her own vote, and at the end of the night, we call the winning organization, and Food for Our Children was the last one. So we have a grant that is open, and it actually ends March 1st. So if you're listening and you're out there, you have a whole day to get your grant in, and then we'll open it up again in June, where our fall grant. So June 1st to August 1st will be our 2018 fall grant. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening and you couldn't get your grant in this time, definitely look for us.
And where would
they
find more information about 101 Women?
101womensandpoint.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have an event. We have just a minute or two left here. You got an event happening on Tuesday, March 6th. It's going to benefit Food for Our Children. That's the Kids Helping Kids. There's going to be a silent auction. People could donate to the silent auction right now, and they can come and bid the heck out of it on Tuesday. There's going to be a sipping shop, and there's going to be food and drink. You can eat at the Fat Pig. That's the new restaurant right next to the Ponderay Winery. And that's all happening 4 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, March 6th.
Yeah, come out and have a glass of wine, have a beer, have dinner. And 10% of all the proceeds do go back to Food for Our Children. Mm-hmm. And so if you haven't come out and had Fat Pig, it's a delicious, it's a great treat. So come on out.
It's always exciting to see two organizations that are helping partner. And I'm sure Michelle from Food for Our Children, Michelle Murphy, that you have a lot of, as you already mentioned, so many partners in this endeavor to help children not be hungry.
Right.
Going to school. And then there's the whole summer program, too.
Right. We haven't tackled that one yet, but we're thinking about it. So that's going to be a tough one.
Were you here in the studio when we were talking about the school gardens and you brought Alex Manning?
Yes.
Up,
yes.
And we asked him the question, what do you like about gardening? And he just stopped, paused, and said, it's magic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Alex, I remember Alex from Farm and Sidwell.
Yeah.
He was my top gardener over there, and he was the top photographer there, and great kid. Yeah. I haven't seen him in a couple years.
He now
I'd love
plays
to see.
Bass in a jazz band, just so you know.
Okay.
But the thing is that children really benefit not just in so many ways from having school gardens. It really is magical to put a seed in the ground and see it sprout up, and then there's food.
Yeah, I eventually. Mean, and they love it. They're, mm-hmm. they're in the garden. I love kale. I love chard, you know? So it's like you get them eating healthy at a young age, and that really, you know, transfers. And then they're so, you know, it's the ownership. They're so proud of it, too. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great project.
Well, as we get closer to summer and getting those gardens back up and moving going forward, we'd probably like to have you back and
okay.
see how it's going.
Okay, will do.
Yeah, and with that, probably it's time to let our listeners know this is KRFY 88.5, the morning show, and we've been talking with representatives from Food for Our Children and 101 Women and about the event Kids Helping Kids. It's going to happen this coming Tuesday, March 6th.
Yep. So Michelle Murphy from Food for Our Children and Jennifer McDonald from 101 Women, thank you for coming
thank
in today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. We're going to hear a song by Josh Ritter, and then we're going to come back and possibly talk a little bit about some other things that are going on, and then we'll hear our interview with Luke Mayville from Reclaim Idaho with an update on the initiative to get Medicaid expansion on the ballot. So right now, this is Josh Ritter. The song is called Idaho. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Josh Ritter, Idaho. We are here for the morning show on 88.5 KRFY, and this is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And tomorrow on the morning show, Jim and Jack. That's Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their guests will be Dinah Wall with a festival at Sandpoint with an update. So you can hear that. We're going to hear now a recorded interview that I did with Luke Mayville from Reclaim Idaho. It's an update on the current campaign that they have to put Medicaid expansion on the November general election ballot. So thanks for tuning in and have a great day. And this is the interview with Luke Mayville. Luke Mayville, thank you for coming into the KRFY studio this morning. You are one of the original organizers of Reclaim Idaho, the organization that is now in the middle of a petition drive to put Medicaid expansion on the November general election ballot. Tell us about this campaign, what it is for, what it will take to get this done. Just tell us.
Thank you so much, Susie, for having me here. For 4 years now, we in Idaho have had the option to expand Medicaid, but for 4 years, our state legislators have failed to expand Medicaid, and that means that for the last 4 years, we've been refusing to take our federal tax dollars back into Idaho that we're already paying for. So every year, Idahoans, we pay federal taxes, and those tax dollars go to fund the Medicaid programs of other states. What Medicaid expansion would do is it would bring that money back into Idaho to expand Medicaid eligibility right here. And it would cover close to 80,000 people in Idaho who currently are desperate for health care. These are people who make too much money to qualify for Medicaid because they're working, but they don't make enough to afford health insurance on the state exchange. So they're what's called the Medicaid gap. Now, the good news is that back in November of 2017, the state of Maine decided they're going to put this thing on the ballot because their state legislature, their governor, hadn't managed to expand Medicaid. It was one of the 19 states, along with Idaho and so many others, that hadn't expanded Medicaid. So they got a citizens initiative together They put Medicaid expansion on the ballot, and it won by 59% to 41%, so by an 18-point margin it won. And we in Idaho, our organization Reclaim Idaho, we witnessed that happening. We were inspired just by their organizing in the lead-up to the vote. We saw the vote happen, and we launched our own initiative. We want to make Idaho the second state to expand Medicaid by ballot initiative. And that's what we're trying to engage thousands of people all around the state in that effort. And it's lovely to be back here, because here in Sandpoint, where I grew up, where the others who started the organization grew up, this is where it all started. This is where the entire campaign started. So it's great to be back.
Why would Idaho not take the federal money for Medicaid when it's already being paid by the citizens of Idaho?
There is no good reason, as far as I can tell. The Governor Otter issued a report that was commissioned to a work group that he appointed of experts. You know, it wasn't partisan. It was people from all kinds of different backgrounds, but mainly people who really understood healthcare and the economics of healthcare. And Governor Otter's report found that Medicaid expansion would create 14,000 new jobs. It would bring in over $40 million in new revenue that would be generated by all those new jobs, new income tax revenue, new property tax revenue, new sales tax revenue, over $40 million. We predict that Medicaid expansion would bring $500 million of our own taxes back into Idaho every single year. It's predicted that that money would save rural hospitals all across the state. So when you add all these things up, and you also notice that this would get healthcare to close to 80,000 people who need it, yeah, the question becomes, why haven't they done it? The best answer I have, and it's a really sad answer, but it becomes about partisan politics. People associate Medicaid expansion with the former president, President Obama. There's been an unwillingness among elected officials to want to associate themselves in any way with this or that party or this or that president. We believe that's starting to change. And we believe that there was never that reluctance to expand Medicaid among the broader population, whether you're Democrat, Independent, or Republican. It was always the right thing to do. It was always the practical thing to do. And that showed up whenever they took public opinion surveys. Boise State University has been running a public opinion survey for 2 years now, where they ask people about the Medicaid gap problem. In 2016, when the public was surveyed, 70% said they wanted legislative action to address the Medicaid gap. 1 year later, it jumped from 70% to 75.6%. So even though there's been a majority in the state legislature who, for, I believe, partisan reasons, does not want to do this, there's always been broad support among voters, whether they're Democrat, Republican, or Independent. This kind of situation is exactly what the ballot initiative process is designed for. These situations where there's a big gulf between how ordinary voters feel about an issue and how legislators feel about an issue. When ordinary voters aren't being accurately represented by their elected representatives, that is why we also have this other tool in our democratic toolbox called the ballot initiative to do it on our own. That's what it's designed to do, and that's what we're doing. And we're everywhere we go, we see broad support, regardless of party, regardless of how people feel about a whole different range of issues, regardless of how they think about what's happening in Washington, D.C., they think here in Idaho, Medicaid should be expanded.
Well, one of the things you mentioned was almost 80,000 people who are not currently insured. And you mentioned the gap. These are working families or individuals that would benefit by being able to qualify for health insurance. Can you explain that a little bit more, this gap?
Yes. So when you go all around the state, what you'll find, and here in Bonner County as much as anywhere, you'll encounter people and you ask them, what do they think of this Medicaid expansion issue? You talk to them about it. And they'll say things like, oh, Medicaid. Yeah, I remember I had that at one point in my life when I wasn't working, when I was really struggling. I had that. But then when I got a job, I made too much money to qualify for it anymore. So I lost my Medicaid and I lost my health care. There's an old system, there's an old way of doing things where that would be okay, because ideally, in an ideal world, maybe it was more like this back in the 70s or something. I don't know. But if you are on Medicaid and then you get a job and your employer gives you health care, so you move on to employer-based health insurance. This is an important point that I would like everyone to think about, but I don't think people have to think much about it because everyone has experienced it. Everyone sees it all around them. We have a different kind of economy now. We have an economy where most of the new jobs, most of the available jobs are lower wage jobs that do not offer health insurance. If they do offer health insurance, it's not very good health insurance oftentimes. So that means that what often happens is when people are really struggling and not making any money and they're on Medicaid, when they go and get a job, they lose their Medicaid and they also lose any health insurance because the job they got does not pay, does not cover them. So that means, yeah, there are thousands of people all around this, tens of thousands of people all around the state who are not just working hard, they're often working two jobs. And, you know, you meet people who have just chronic toothaches and they live every day in pain and they just want to go to a dentist. But the choice they face is, do I get a third job just so that I can go to the dentist? And then you meet single mothers who, do I get a third job to go to the dentist? And that means I can't see my kids. That means I just have to leave my kids at home from 8 p.m. to midnight while I go to my third job.
So there's a real need and there is a real reason why this could work. And so the citizens of Idaho, initiated by Reclaim Idaho, are signing petitions now to get this idea of Medicaid expansion, to bring that federal money back to Idaho to help the 80,000 uninsured working families and individuals in the state have health insurance. Mm-hmm. So just give us an update. How is that going? And it started, as you said, here in Sandpoint, but it has really expanded.
The model that we work with to organize people is a real neighborhood team model. It's really grassroots organizing. It's all volunteer. We currently have a statewide campaign. As we started to really build all across the state, we faced all this pressure. People said, whoa, you're trying to do something really big statewide. When are you going to actually hire a staff? When are you going to actually build out a normal campaign where you have all these different staff members doing all these different roles? We said, we took a gamble. We said, okay, we do need some organization, but we're going to hire one staff member. So that's what we did. And we hired this extraordinary young man named Zach Reeder, 23 years old, to be our statewide field director. We're fortunate to have a number of leaders in the campaign, a number of organizers who are overseeing different parts of the campaign who are entirely volunteer. So, for example, Garrett and I and Garrett Strzic and his wife, Emily, they're entirely volunteer. They have their other jobs and their other pursuits that they do, just like I do. But they care enough about this to really be volunteer organizers. And those of us who've been involved from the very beginning, we then work with our field director. We really just consider him part of the team, and he's our one paid staff. But then the real heart and soul of the campaign are the volunteer teams all over the state. So right now we've got teams in about 25 localities. A really important part of it is that these teams have leaders. There are volunteer leaders, usually at the county levels, county leaders in about 20 counties. And then in some cases, it breaks down by district. So there are legislative district leaders. So Boise's so big that if you just did Ada County, it would be too vast for any one person. So they broke it down to 8 different district leaders. And so we have this vast infrastructure of volunteers led by volunteer leaders. And they've really set themselves these concrete goals of, we're going to get the 2,000 signatures in our district that we need to put this thing over the top. And just to back up for a second, give you sense of where we're, what the goals are and where we're at, we need 56,000 signatures for the entire state. That's 6% of all registered voters. That's number one. The second and final thing we need is 6% of registered voters from 18 different legislative districts. That's about half of Idaho's legislative districts. Where we're at today, we believe that with the events of the next 2-3 weeks, we're poised to break through that 6% threshold in all 18 of the districts we need by the middle of March. That from then on, it will be a sprint for the final 6 weeks to get to that total of 56,000. What we're asking people to do in all of everywhere around the state, including Sandpoint, is to race towards that finish line of the signatures that are needed locally. Here in Sandpoint, we believe we're under 200 signatures away. We have an 1,800 signature goal, and we're about 200 signatures away, and we believe we can make it. And I'll tell you about some opportunities to volunteer and help us get over that finish line. And then after we get over that finish line, I would say what we need to do is celebrate, pat ourselves on the back, you know, congratulate each other, but then keep moving towards that, contributing to that total. So whatever you can do to, you know, find friends and family who haven't signed it yet, that's important because that's going to go towards that 56,000 total that we need.
It started as a huge challenge. I don't think this has been done very often in Idaho. I think the last time was, what, 12 years ago?
So what a lot of people remember is about 6 years ago, there was the Luna Law, was repealed, the repeal of the Luna Laws around education. And that was a citizen initiative. But it wasn't a ballot initiative that was proposing a law. Instead, it was repealing a law. And that's considered a little bit easier. But an actual ballot initiative to enact a new law, I believe, hasn't been done in about 22 years. I believe the last one was term limits in the 1990s. So what we're doing is historic. And 2 months ago, I wouldn't have emphasized how unprecedented and how much of an uphill battle this is. But now I love to emphasize it because we actually have momentum to win. So we have to realize that we're doing something very difficult, and we're doing something historic, and that even though it's been improbable all along, it's been unlikely, it's always been worth it, and it's always been worth hoping for. And we are now really, you know, seeing the horizon, and we're seeing the possibility of victory.
You know, so often citizens, voters say, well, my vote doesn't count. But in this case, on a ballot initiative, it's a whole different story. Not only does your vote count when it gets on the ballot, but you can also get involved to get it to happen, to get it onto the ballot. So let's just talk for a brief moment about how folks can get involved.
The main way that people can get involved here in Sandpoint is later this week and this weekend, on Friday and Saturday, outside of the Panada at the Follies, we're going to have people circulating petitions. If you want to just show up and join in that effort, you can do that. It's going to be from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. But what I would also say is, if you have not signed the petition, please, this is a perfect opportunity. You can go outside the Panada anytime between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. and you're going to find someone circulating the petition. It'll be really easy for you to just stop by and sign.
And what if you wanted to become someone that stood there with a clipboard and got signatures and you thought, well, maybe I'll go talk to every one of my relatives and I have a large family or something like that. How would you access a petition that you could get signed? And then what would you have to do with that?
The easiest way to do that is to go on our website at medicaidforidaho.org. There you'll find pretty easy instructions to print the petition. There's even a little video instruction of the different steps you have to take between printing and notarizing the petition once you've collected the signatures. So go on the website. There's some pretty clear guidelines there, and you can just start there, And you can show up on Friday at 4 p.m. Friday at 6 p.m. and jump in yourself.
We're speaking here with Luke Mayville, one of the organizers of the ballot initiative to get Medicaid expansion onto the ballot in November, about different ways to get involved and what it really means and how it can benefit the citizens of Idaho at really very little cost. I wanted to read one of Reclaim Idaho's statements. We believe that every working family in Idaho deserves access to affordable health care, and that is why we are launching a petition campaign to put Medicaid expansion on the ballot. Together, we can win. And how are you feeling right now? And what have you seen around the state as far as response and people coming together? And as you said, it's a nonpartisan issue.
Yes, we're seeing response everywhere, positive response everywhere we go. Insofar as people are reluctant to sign, they're generally gracious about it. They just say, no, thank you. They say, don't have time right now. It's very rare that people will offer any kind of objection. And even when they do, that's perfectly okay too. And I personally, when I've traveled around with people and started these conversations, I really enjoy it going through the back and forth, trying to figure out what is it, what could it be about this that people don't support. And what I've often found is that once we talk through it a little bit, it turns out that there's a lot of misinformation. So for example, people think that it will cost taxpayers a lot of money, but actually by all the studies say that it will save taxpayers money. And that's not just speculation, because we know just over the border in Montana, they expanded Medicaid, and it's been enacted for about 20 months. And Montana has already saved $30 million in taxpayer money just in that time. So we relish those conversations because it's really a good way to get out there into communities all around the state and just share this information and really start a broader conversation with people who don't always agree with you on every issue, but that can at least come together around something. And I think one of the things that's given me a lot of hope is that people are really hungry to come together around something that makes sense, something that's both common sense and compassionate, something that helps people while also saving taxpayer dollars. People are getting pretty fatigued, exhausted by the constant division, and they really appreciate a chance to join forces and actually try to get something done that will help people. So,
I just want to remind folks, the website is medicaidforidaho.org. You can learn more about this ballot initiative. And Luke Mayville, thank you so much for coming in. This is an update, but we want you to come back and give us another update, maybe sometime in April, to inform the voters so that they can be inspired to get involved. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Susie. We launched here, so it's always great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.